And Peter gave us a whole lot of just those two paragraphs to work with for beginning to think through what kind of design, what structural foundation we need to create the next social arrangement based on non-coercion and the full development of our gifts. And in that last sentence, that it's time for us to assume the leadership, I think is another piece that we need to incorporate in our thinking of what is the foundation of the freedom that we want, that we, that will be our future. Each one of us gets to develop our leadership. So let's continue our reading of Emmanuel Wallerstein's The Modern World System for Centrist Liberalism Triumphant, 1789 to 1914. And this is from the chapter 3, The Liberal State and Class Conflict. During the first half of the 19th century, socialism as a concept was still not separate from bourgeois democracy as a concept, or, as Labrousse says, quote, Jacobinism and socialism remained muddled in political life, unquote. In some sense, it probably remained for at least a century thereafter that a full distinction of the two concepts did not exist. Nonetheless, liberalism, which seems to me a better locution than bourgeois democracy, and socialism began to have diverging trajectories as political options after 1830. Indeed, as Hobsbawm argues, quote, practical liberals shied away from political democracy. The social discontents, revolutionary movements, and socialist ideologues of the post-Napoleonic era intensified this dilemma. And Wallerstein interjects, this dilemma of relying upon the majority to carry out the dictates of reason is what Hobsbawm was looking at. And there, embedded in that offhand remark, is the core, key, almost originating propaganda piece of class, that you cannot rely on the majority to deliver a society that is optimal for everyone, that only a tiny few who are in possession of the philosophical wisdom of Plato can do that for us. Continuing with this Hobsbawm quote. And the 1830 revolution made it acute, this dilemma. Liberalism and democracy appeared to be adversaries rather than allies. Unquote from Hobsbawm. Before continuing with this chapter 3 of Emmanuel Wallerstein, I think it would be helpful to understand what he means by liberalism. And the following quote is from his opening chapter of the book. And I think it will help clarify how he's using the term liberal and liberalism, which I'm encouraging us to consider, refers to a new strategy and tactics invented post-French Revolution by folks with a Plato allegiance, determined to supplant the old aristocrats because they believed they had a better plan to suppress us, we the people. Quote from the opening chapter of Emmanuel Wallerstein's Modern World System 4. Liberalism started ideological life on the left of the political spectrum, or at least on the center left. And I commented right away, this use of liberals, it seems to me, is how I use Plato's tribesmen, the power guys, post-French Revolution. And I think we'll have to think about whether that is the case as we read. But if there's any correspondence at all to apply the term left to these guys in any sense of the word, from where I sit, invalidates it. And left ideology is a concept specific to bourgeois democracy. As underclass, there has never been a time when we the people did not produce ideologies of freedom. Popper makes that clear too in The Open Society and Its Enemies when he talks about that Plato's work was conscious political strategy to destroy the existing anti-slavery movement that was definitely had traction in his day, which is why he had to sort of tiptoe around a lot of the outright anti-humanitarian, totalitarian language that he had to sort of talk in code. Power guys love to do that. So continuing with Emmanuel Wallerstein, liberalism defined itself as the opposite of conservatism, and by conservatism he means, I assume, attachment to the old aristocratic privileges and values, posed itself as the opposite of conservatism on the basis of what might be called a consciousness of being modern. And again, back to Bentham, you define the terms, you define the world. And, you know, they define modern, they define liberal, and then it's all so, it's the truth, right? As long as they have that lexicon securely in their grasp. Continuing, liberalism proclaimed itself universalist, sure of themselves and of the truth of this new worldview of modernity. Liberals sought to propagate their views and intrude the logic of their views within all social institutions. And of course, my comment, that is the definition of totalitarianism. And why? My whole life, has that never been said out loud? So we can start discussing it. As well as the fact that they have succeeded in their ambition, thanks to the poisoned pedagogues that Alice discusses, and the use of war to slaughter the opposition and beat us into submission. Continuing, intrude their worldview into all social institutions, thereby, with this tactic, from their perspective, ridding the world of the quote-unquote irrational leftovers of the past. To do this, you know, like our wanting to be free, to do this, they had to fight conservative ideologues whom they saw as obsessed. Well, that's the other end of the spectrum, I guess. Whom they saw as obsessed with fear of free men. There you go, define the terms. Men liberated from the false idols of tradition. This, my comment, this sugary spin is their originating propaganda, their origin myth and self-justification. Continuing, liberals believed, however, that progress, even though it was inevitable, could not be achieved without some human effort, without a political program. And here again, my comment again, we give thanks for Karl Popper's explanation of historicism, story leading reality, and how it keys into their belief in totalitarian social engineering. Continuing, liberal ideology was thus the belief that in order for history to follow its natural course, I'm sorry, it's just the arrogance, the hubris is just so enormous. You know, they take their thought process and install it as something real that we have to bow down and kiss. So in order for history, i.e. the thoughts in their head, to live, it would need active engagement. That in order for history to follow its natural course, it was necessary to engage in conscious, continual, intelligent reformism, in full awareness that time was the universal friend, which would inevitably, and this is a quote, which would inevitably bring greater happiness to ever greater numbers. That's from Shapiro. Now that's straight up Hegel on history and collateral misery. Like, you know, gotta, you know, break those eggs, make that omelet. And we, of course, are the ones who always get our heads broken, our hearts broken. And Bentham, of course, his greatest happiness principle, who at least was honest. But these guys can absolutely not be taken at their word. Not these guys, with their lordly lies and their training as infants to keep secrets. Secrecy is their watchword, hiding their MO. public presentation, necessarily the dissemination of propaganda.